Welcome to Israel and You, bringing Israel and the Jewish people into focus. Our host is Aaron David Free, president of Israel Team Advocates International. Aaron is an author, speaker, Bible teacher, and an advocate for Israel and the Jewish people on college campuses nationwide. This is Israel and You.
Welcome to Israel and You, and today it's our wonderful honor to have a very esteemed guest with us today on Israel and You, Dr. Charles Small. He's the executive director of ISGAP, the founding director and president of the Institute of the Study of Global Anti-Semitism and Policy, also known as GISGAP. He is also the director of the ISGAP Wolf Institute Fellowship Training Program in Critical Contemporary Anti-Semitism Studies at the Wolf Institute at Cambridge University in the United Kingdom. He was an academic visitor at St. Antony's College, Oxford University. He is also a Goldman Fellow, Harold Hartig School of Government and Policy, and a senior research fellow at Moshe Dayan Center for Middle East and African Studies, Tel Aviv University. Previously, Dr. Small was the Coret Distinguished Fellow at Hoover Institution at Stanford University. And I tell you, this bio of Dr. Small is just, you know, page after page, but he's a well-published author, book after book on anti-Semitism. Charles is committed to creating scholarly programming and research on contemporary anti-Semitism at top-tier universities international and establishing contemporary anti-Semitism studies as a recognized academic discipline. So, Charles, it's my great honor to have you today on the podcast Israel and You.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here with you, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
So, Charles, in my opinion, this is my opinion, it's not flattering, trying to flatter you, but it's my opinion, ISGAP, the Institute for the Study of Global Anti-Semitism Policy, in my opinion, is the premier think tank that has brought the issue of historic and contemporary anti-Semitism into the arena of scholarship in the academic world. So could you just give us kind of a brief overview of the early beginnings and evolution of ISGAP, you know, why an organization like this is so important, especially in this world today when anti-Semitism is exploding on campuses globally?
Sure. So thank you. So we started ISGAP, which is the Institute for the Study of Global Anti-Semitism and Policy. It's 20 years ago now. And I was fortunate to start it with Professor Elie Wiesel, who was a Nobel Prize winner. And, you know, he is the author of Night and the Witness to the Holocaust, Survivor of the Holocaust, and a really brilliant intellectual. And we started it together because we began to see the rise of anti-Semitism in the world, but more specifically in academia, in the universities, not just on the campus, but in the classroom. And we started running seminars in Yale University in 2003. And we were a small group of professors, and it grew. And today, you know, in 2024, ISGAP has an office in Florida and in New York. We have, as you said, we have programs at Oxford and Cambridge in the United Kingdom. We have an entity in Israel and in Italy as well. And we work with the Vatican and also with the Muslim World League and other ecumenical organizations and groups around the world to try to have rapprochement and, you know, respect for one another. We have about 60 research professors from around the world that work with us, and we do research projects, seminars online. We have a digital research center where people could, you know, attend seminars online and public events. And we publish, and we're trying to raise awareness of anti-Semitism in the United States and around the world. And as Professor Elie Wiesel always said, that, you know, anti-Semitism is not a parochial problem just for the Jewish people or for Israel. Mm-hmm. Anti-Semitism begins with the Jewish people, but it's a form of hatred that once it's unleashed, it knows no bounds. So yes, we can see the Jewish American community on campus and around the world in different cities, around the country and around the world in different cities being under threat, but we can also see that the anti-Semites are beginning to disrupt universities and our streets and basic common decorum in our society. So this is a problem, a strategic and security problem, I believe, for the United States of America and for other democracies around the world.
And I can give testimony, Charles, the last two summers I've attended the ISGAP Summer Institute at Oxford in the UK, and it's just what you've developed is a wonderful think tank of academics and scholars from all over the globe, and they meet together at Oxford every summer to talk about these issues, the growing scourge of anti-Semitism in our world. And this past weekend, you and I did presentations at the University of Texas at Dallas at the Scholars Conference on the Holocaust and the Churches. And I remember quite vividly, I was standing in the lunch line with you, and you turned to me and you said, "How are you, Aaron?" And then you said, "These are very dark times." And the world wasn't paying attention to global anti-Semitism, it seems to me, but they are now, I mean, after October 7th. And you would have thought that there would have been a mercy, you know, from the world for what happened on October 7th, the Hamas massacre of 1,200 Jewish people and taking hundreds hostage. You would think there would have been a mercy, but it seems that there's even more hatred and violence towards the State of Israel and Jewish students on campus that are being unleashed. It's like the abyss has opened up. So in your opinion, what's changed since October 7th in global anti-Semitism?
It's a great question. Look, I think that we are living in a time of a great emergency. Professor Elie Wiesel at the Canadian Parliament, he spoke there in 2003, and he said that we were living in times of great urgency, and then he went on to correct himself, and he said, no, we're living in a time of a great emergency. And this was 2003. And we know that things have become much more dire since then in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. Look, the Nazis, to some extent, hid the final solution. Their extermination of the Jewish people, led by intellectuals and theologians, was hidden to some extent, certainly from the Allies, as they liquidated and tried to eliminate the Jewish people. Today, jihadists actually film their atrocities in the hope of attracting more support for jihadist radical Islam and their quest not only to destroy Israel and to exterminate the Jewish people, but to destroy democracy and to destroy the United States of America. Israel and the Jews and this perverted worldview is the little Satan, and the United States of America is the big Satan. So again, this is not just a problem for the Jewish people or Israel. We're linked. This is an attack on democracy. And we know from research that the Muslim Brotherhood is an extreme Islamic social movement. And I'm not speaking about Islam or Muslims. I'm speaking about a very specific radical jihadist ideology and social movement that takes European Nazism and fuses it with a perversion of Islam. And the Muslim Brotherhood is the intellectual foundation of Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Hezbollah, Hamas, and Iran, the Iranian Revolutionary Regime. This is the ideological roots. And they're out to finish the work of Hitler, in the words of their spiritual leader. And we know for the last 40 years that they're going to use, and they're using anti-Semitism to distance Israel and the Jewish people from the United States and to weaken America. And we can see what they've been, you know, achieved in the last 40 years. They've had quite a lot of progress on their twisted agenda. And they do this in part by funding American universities and funding American cultural institutions and even large corporations and banks. In our work, we found $1 trillion in assets that the Qataris are using to fund American universities. Qatar is a tiny country with less than 350,000 citizens, and they give more money to American universities than any other country in the planet.
Wow.
The Qatari kingdom, the royal family of Qatar, made a spiritual oath to the Muslim Brotherhood. They abide by all the religious fatwas and edicts of the Brotherhood, and they follow them as their spiritual leaders. So Qatar, on the one hand, has a U.S. military base. They're negotiating for the hostages, not in good faith, but they present themselves as a middleman. But we know they have very good relations with the Taliban, with ISIS. They house the leadership of Hamas to this day. The people who orchestrated, planned, and carried out the massacre of innocent Israelis, mutilating them, raping, killing children in front of their parents, and killing parents in front of their children. These are the people who have paid for this. They said the Qatari government not only has the leadership of Hamas housed in opulence in Qatar, but they send money every month to Hamas in Gaza. And they've built the military infrastructure, which we see is being now dismantled in a brutal war as we speak. So I think the rise of anti-Semitism has been well planned and carried out for decades. They've influenced our students. You can see professors and students supporting Hamas, supporting a brutal group of people with a cult of death, with American hostages and hostages from many countries still in Gaza. Nobody knows if they're alive or dead, or if they're continuously being tortured or raped. There's no word from these bandits. So, yes, so I think it's all interconnected, and it's a very challenging time. And the thing to me that is the most disturbing, I kind of understand the Islamic jihadist extremists. We get them. Their ideology is clear. Their goals are clear. They're kind of honest with what they want to do with infidels, with Jews and Christians and Americans.
Right.
But what really disturbs me is the silence of our intellectuals, of our professors, our student leaders, and our presidents of universities, and our leaders in Congress and the Senate. There has to be responsibility to put an end to this vile Jew hatred.
You know, the chairman of ISGAP's board, Natan Sharansky, he's written about the three D's of anti-Semitism. And they are delegitimizing, demonizing, and holding a double standard against Israel. And I've had the question posed to me, you know, since October 7th. You know, a person will say, well, I'm not anti-Semitic, but I'm an anti-Zionist. And I'd like you to explain to us why, you know, anti-Zionism fulfills these three D's, and why anti-Zionism is really anti-Semitic, and so how are these issues of the three D's playing out in regards to the state of Israel today, Charles?
Right. So it's a good question. We're very honored that Natan Sharansky is our chair, and he's a great intellectual mind and freedom fighter and fighter for democracy. A human rights activist in the best sense of the word. Look, I think Zionism is an idea for the Jewish people to have self-determination in their indigenous homeland. Mm-hmm. And we know that if you pick up the Torah, the Talmud, if you pick up the New Testament or the Quran, if you pick up a history book, you know that the Jewish people are indigenous to the land of Israel. It's clear. And, you know, despite, centuries of lack of the ability to have self-determination and independence in our homeland, there's been Jewish people there throughout history. And we finally, in 1948, had, you know, miraculously, were able to establish sovereignty on our land, on our indigenous land. Mm-hmm. And people, Jewish people from, you know, the four corners of the world, this is sort of a prophecy in many ways, are in the process of returning and rebuilding our nation, and from the sands. Israel is now a vibrant, democratic society with incredible technology, education, free press, free elections, high technology, medical research. It's really a miraculous experiment in state building and the self-determination of Jewish people. Now, when you take away the rights of Jewish people to have access to be connected to their land, you deny the Jewish people a basic, inherent, inalienable right. Mm. And this is what the radical Islamists are trying to do. From a radical Islamist perspective, a Jew or a Christian cannot be equal to a Muslim. And Israel and the Jewish people are the only non-Muslims to have self-determination in that part of the world. And the radical jihadists can't accept it. Even if Israel was Tel Aviv and all the other land was ceded to its neighbors, and only the Jews had self-determination in Tel Aviv, that would be unacceptable for these barbaric people who can't accept the Jews or can't accept the Christians or can't accept moderate Muslims. And then on the other hand, you have these so-called intellectuals, these radical postmodern intellectuals at our finest universities that sort of deny the self-determination of the Jewish people from a radical Soviet communist-inspired worldview. And the anti-Semitism that they expressed is rooted very much in Soviet propaganda of the 50s and 60s and 70s. And, these are the people that label Israel as a racist state or an apartheid state or an occupying state. It's incredible. But this type of ideology is gaining traction. And the intellectuals who espouse post-modernity, modern thought or post-religious thought, where everything is narratives and there's no good and there's no evil. It's astounding. These people don't like American and Western power or hegemony, and they want to weaken Western power, American power, in the name of equality, global equality. So these anti-Western, anti-American, radical, they claim they're left, but I don't even think they're really left. They want to weaken America and the West, and so do the radical Muslims. The radical Islamist Muslims, like the Muslim Brotherhood, understand the state as part of the legacy of colonialism and Western imperialism. So these left-wing secular nihilists who are teaching our children more and more have this sort of common ground with these radical religious zealots who want to destroy the West. So it's an amazing, we call this the Red-Green Alliance. And, we saw the fruits of this, ideology that is being funded by Qatar and the Muslim Brotherhood at our best universities, come explode after the massacres of October the 7th. And we see this sort of anti-Semitism and Western, anti-Western and anti-American ideology and protesting and aggressive, even violent protesting on our campuses and on our streets.
Charles, you're right. What you said to me in the lunch line, these are very dark days for the Jewish people globally, Jews, Israelis living in the state of Israel. And I want to ask you one more question before we wrap up, and then you're going to be back on next week's podcast, and we're going to talk about the money trail. And ISGAP has been in the news in the last couple months because of a funding of American universities from the country of Qatar. But we'll talk about that next time. But just in closing here, it's a question I get all the time. And people, when they look at anti-Semitism, now that it's exploding and it's on the news and Christian people are saying, we never knew it was this deep, they're asking me the question, why is there anti-Semitism? And your definition, your understanding of it has really helped me. And you talk about the Jew as the proverbial other. So could you kind of explain in your perspective what drives anti-Semitism?
Well, it's a complex issue, but I think when you speak about it in terms of the other, I think there's a tendency, there has been a tendency historically of various religions, including Christianity and Islam at various stages, and also different philosophical movements and political movements for not accepting the Jewish people, you know, for who they are, for who they are, and the role that they play in our world historically, and even, you can say, at a spiritual, metaphysical level, that there is a role for the Jew in our world. And, you know, the Jewish people have brought so much to the world. Abraham and the prophets have, you know, brought monotheism, if you will, to the world, and so much more. And I think it's, you know, in Jewish ethics, we believe in the notion of humility. And we don't believe really in tolerance. We believe in humility. And in Jewish ethics, Immanuel Levinas, a great philosopher who used Jewish ethics in his teaching, always argued that we need the other to be a human being. And in Jewish ethics, we learn that the moment we see our face in the face of the other, that's the instant we're human. Wow. We need the other to be a human being, which is different than I say, the notion of tolerance, where we sort of accept the other in a position of, let's say, a higher position, if you will. So I think this humility is really important. And I think for Christians and Muslims to truly be Christian or Muslim, they have to accept the Jewish people for who they are. And I think there's been a tendency to convert them, to change them. And once you start civilizing people or changing people, I think then you run into problems of discrimination and prejudice and even, you know, even worse. It can translate into violence. And I think we went through different phases of trying to change the Jew. You know, there was the religious phase where people thought that, you know, you have to save the Jewish soul and convert them. And if they didn't, if they weren't converted, they'd be blinded by evil and could not have salvation with God. And what made anti-Semitism even genocidal is that people believed that if the Jews didn't convert, that there would be no world redemption, that they were, by not accepting the Christian notion of the Messiah, there'd be no world redemption. And I think when the global worldview shifted from religion, predominantly from religion, to notions of race and science and nationalism and biology and ethnic identities, you know, this sort of racialization of the Jewish people is that people perceived the Jew as not a pure race and that they were poisoning the Aryan pure race and the Aryan nation, and they had to be eliminated. And this racist anti-Semitism culminates in the Holocaust, culminates in the mass murder, planned and executed mass murder of the Jewish people. Today, as we shift our gaze and understand, I guess, our reality in different ways, there's this movement. On the one hand, the radical religious Islamic ideology that can't accept anybody that's different than themselves, so they want to eliminate Israel. And then on the other hand, you have this sort of postmodern anti-Semitic moment in our universities and in our media of record, and I think increasingly even in our halls of political institutions, even in the United States, where you saw after October the 7th, where people, innocent people, were just so brutalized.
Right.
You have the presidents of our finest universities unable to denounce the calls for genocide against faculty and students in the midst, in these institutions. The leaders of these universities cannot bring themselves to speak out and protect their colleagues and their students against people for calling genocide in Harvard, in the University of Pennsylvania, in MIT. Our best universities, our strongest universities in the country, if not in the world.
Right.
So, yeah. So, So this is really a crisis when, and you can see that anti-Semitism begins with the Jews, but it doesn't end with the Jews. Now you have leaders in our society unable to call out bigotry, unable to defend basic American democratic values and Christian values, for that matter.
It's very dark times, as you say, Charles, and I like what Elie Wiesel said. That, what did he say? It's a time of emergency, and I think the alarm bells are sounding, and it's the proverbial canary in the coal mine. The canary is stopped singing, and it was the alarm for the early coal miners to flee the mines because of imminent danger. And so when anti-Semitism rises in a culture, as it is in America, it is the canary in the coal mine. It's something is amiss. There's a deep crumbling of morality in a culture that, and ethics in a culture that allows anti-Semitism to run amok as it is today in the academic world in America and beyond. So, Charles, it's so honorable to have you today, and I respect you. I told you the other day, you're just like my hero. I mean, it's like, you know, you're the man that is just taken on this whole issue of, you know, anti-Semitism within the academy and the intellectual world, and you're fighting it with everything that you, every breath that you have. You're in this battle. So I just applaud the work of ISGAP, and so appreciate you having you with me today on this podcast.
It's a real honor, Aaron. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll see everyone next time on Israel and You.